My name's Captain John, and I'd like to welcome you aboard Pride of Baltimore 2.
About a dozen people are boarding one of Baltimore's most famous sailboats. It shares the name of a vessel that was lost at sea 18 years ago. Memories of that day have faded, and on this bright and breezy afternoon, people just want a sailing adventure.
When the time comes to set sail, if you'd like to help, he's the guy to see because he'll put a line in your hand and say, pull, pull harder, stop pulling. And let's go sailing.
Deckhands cast off thick rope lines as the schooner pulls away from its mooring, sandwiched between an ancient warship and a submarine on the Baltimore Harbor.
It's such a beautiful boat.
We've come here to meet former Baltimore Sun reporter and author Tom Waldron, who's looking up with admiration at the tall ship he's been drawn to for years.
It's got this beautiful black hull with a sort of racy yellow stripe along the whole side. The masts are raked backward. It's got flags and pennants flapping. And it's got this sort of spider web of lines and rigging all over the ship that give it this beautiful, old-fashioned, complicated look. It just says, I'm complicated to sail. You know, you need to know what you're doing when you're sailing me.
Waldron is drawn to the ship's beauty, but also to the tragedy that unfolded in the spring of 1986. He has written Pride of the Sea, Courage, Disaster, and a Fight for Survival, a book based on the sinking of the Pride of Baltimore. That ship was an authentic replica of an 1800s Baltimore clipper, one of the fastest and most daring schooners of its time. Waldron says city leaders set out to build it when Baltimore was struggling and its inner harbor was a neglected mess.
If you were standing here in, the mid-60s, you would have seen a completely different landscape. None of this was here. There was rotting wharfs. The Science Center wasn't here. The aquarium wasn't here. This place was falling apart. There were rats. The water stank. And Baltimore was really having trouble.
So they built the first Pride of Baltimore ship right here on the harbor. The whole community wanted to be a part. Local carpenters and a blacksmith set up shop on site, and people came to witness the rebirth of Baltimore's famed maritime history.
Hundreds of ships would call every day in this harbor, all up and down.
What was that?
That was the, I believe, the Constellation firing its cannon.
Well, it's appropriate for a conversation about history, maybe.
Absolutely. These ships, you know, were involved in a lot of battles, so cannons were a real part of their life.
So tell me about the history of the clipper, the Baltimore clipper.
They were used in different ways. One of their most famous missions was to harass the British ships during the War of 1812. Privateers were given basically carte blanche to go out and raise hell with the British vessels at the time. It's a legal pirate, essentially. The British were so annoyed with the Baltimore clippers that was one of the reasons they came up the Chesapeake Bay to burn the Baltimore shipyards.
Even though it was initially conceived as a waterfront museum not built to Coast Guard specifications, excitement over the Pride led it to sea. It became the city's official ambassador, sailing to ports throughout the world, including a famed crossing of the Atlantic to visit Europe. Waldron says the ship lived up to its name.
The maritime history of Baltimore was so vivid and so strong that the Pride could represent that and harken back to that in a nice way and just give people a new image of the city.
Yet there was the irony that here was this majestic ship that had gone over the Atlantic and been this ambassador for Baltimore. One day in May of 1986, never made it back to this harbor.
That's right, yeah. The Pride was coming home. It left St. John, Virgin Islands, and had some light wind for a couple days, and then out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, 300 miles from the nearest land, the boat was sailing along one morning, and a storm came out of nowhere, basically, and overwhelmed the vessel.
There's sort of a decision point for the captain on the day of the disaster when he realizes the storm that he's in is bigger than he thought. What happens next?
Captain Armin Elsasser is trying to figure out what to do. He tries to turn this 90-foot-long boat. This is not like turning a little tiny canoe or something. It takes a little while to turn it. Shoves the tiller to turn the boat all the way. The boat, however, is blowing over. It's blowing over to its left side. You've got to picture the mainsail, this gigantic sail, this big boom coming off the mast. It's starting to hit the water. It's leaning over so far. All of a sudden, the boom is hitting the water, and the sail is getting trapped under the water. The force of the water won't let the boat turn. Instincts of the sailors were all right in line with each other. Cut the sails. Let's cut the sails. If you cut the lines, maybe the sails will spring free, and you can picture this boat sort of bobbing back up, you know, in a sort of fierce, horrible thing, but at least they might not get blown over. One of the deckhands on the at the front of the boat tries to work his way up the boat. You know, he has a knife on his belt. If he can reach the line, he can maybe cut it. He couldn't reach it. Next thing you know, he gets rolled out of the water, out of the boat, into the ocean. He's looking up and he sees sky above the water, and he realizes that the Pride has actually gone over on its side.
So there were 8 survivors of the Pride of Baltimore, which means they lost 4 crew members. Who were they?
The 4 who died were the captain, Armin Elsasser, the engineer, Vinnie Lazzaro, carpenter Barry Duckworth, and deckhand Nina Shack.
You want to tell me the story of Nina?
Nina Shack was from Baltimore, and she was born on May 1st, the same day that the Pride of Baltimore was launched. Not the same year, but they shared the same birth date. When the Pride was being built in the Inner Harbor, she used to come down as a little girl with her mother and watch it being built. She was petite. She was 4'10". Nina Shack is one of those perplexing stories because Nina was not a veteran sailor. She did not really appreciate the danger or the vulnerabilities that were inherent in a ship like the Pride. Certainly her mom did not appreciate that and learned only afterwards about the Pride being this somewhat vulnerable, sleek racing ship. Years later,
she ended up suing, right?
She sure did. Nina's mom and the family of Vinnie Lazzaro both filed claims against the Pride and settled out of court, essentially.
Even though the National Transportation Safety Board actually cleared the organization of negligence, right?
That's right. In the end, the Coast Guard and the National Transportation Safety Board both investigated the sinking of the Pride and essentially declared it to be an act of God, that it was, the weather caused the accident, there was no negligence. And yet, there were questions about how the boat was designed, how stable it was.
So after the ship went down, there were these 8 survivors in the water. Mm-hmm. They're life rafts. They try to blow up. The air comes out of them. They don't stay afloat. They're basically with these big blobs of plastic treading water in the ocean. How do they end up surviving?
One of the crew members, James Chesney, says, "That's enough. Give me the raft." He takes one of the rafts and blows it up by mouth. It takes him about 30 minutes or so. Finally gets the raft inflated enough where they can jump into this, climb into this thing, finally get out of the water. You can imagine treading water for 6 hours.
Wasn't some huge boat. This was pretty cramped quarters.
It's about the size of a single bed mattress, if you can picture that. 8 people with their legs intertwined across a single bed mattress with a roof, a sloped roof, so that they had to hunch forward. They couldn't sit up. And there was water in the raft, and there was vomit in the raft, and it was horrible.
How many days were they afloat until they were rescued?
They were in the raft for 4.5 days, floating westward. They saw a handful of ships pass by off in the distance. They could see the ships. The ships couldn't see them, of course. Finally, on the 5th night that they were afloat, they saw a ship off in the distance, and they had 2 flashlights, fortunately. They had rescued 2 flashlights in the water. One of the crew members was able to stand up and signal an SOS with a flashlight for some time. The Norwegian deckhand who was on board this tanker heading south to Venezuela had the midnight watch and saw this flickering light off in the distance. It's probably a miracle that he thought twice about it, but he had nothing else to see out there in the middle of the ocean and kind of kept looking at this light and trying to figure out what it was. It finally dawned on him that it was an SOS and rescued the 8 sailors from the Pride of Baltimore.
Waldron says most of the survivors are still sailing today. The risk is part of the appeal. So is the awe of what a ship is capable of in the right conditions. The Pride of Baltimore's captain, Armin Elsasser, described that feeling in the ship's log 1 month before he went down with the vessel.
Glorious, glorious sailing. Now we are flying. As we come off the foamy white crest of sapphire seas, Pride lifts her head 4 to 5 feet above the waterline. The jib boom points skyward, and our ship rushes ahead, throwing spray and foam, then settles back into the deep with a thunderous roar. The power, the energy, the giddy feeling of soaring through liquid blue space.
Author Tom Waldron. His book is called Pride of the Sea, Courage, Disaster, and a Fight for Survival. To see photos of the ship and its crew and the Pride of Baltimore II, go to npr.org. That's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Debbie Elliott.